This is special programming on the novel coronavirus from North State Public Radio. I'm Sarah Bohannon. Tonight we check in on how schools in rural areas without internet are staying connected with their students. We hear from a medical worker who 5 years ago helped fight Ebola in West Africa and is now helping battle COVID-19 in the small community of Round Mountain and in Reading. And we'll hear a message from a Chico doctor that's trending on social media about how you can play a role in keeping him and his family safe. We'll be looking into any questions you have over the weekend, so make sure you send them to us so we can answer them next week. Call our message line, 433-9216, or head to our website, mynspr.org. For Friday, March 27th, 2020, this is special coverage from North State Public Radio. First, some news.
For NSPR News, I'm Mark Albert. COVID-19 continues spreading at staggering speeds in California, with health officials saying the number of confirmed cases now stands at 3,801. That's a jump of 795 cases over the past 24 hours. A week ago, the number of cases stood at 1,006 and was rising by a bit more than 300 cases a day. The California Department of Public Health also reports that 48 healthcare workers are among the infected. The illness is also growing more deadly in the state. 13 more people have succumbed to the virus over the last 24 hours, sending the death toll to 78. A week ago, deaths in California stood at 19. The coronavirus is also spreading in the North State. Samples came back positive from two more North State residents, pushing the number of confirmed cases here to 18, and adding Colusa and Glenn to counties where the virus is active. Lassen, Plumas, Tehama, and Trinity are the only North State counties yet to report a case. A week ago, there were no confirmed cases in the region. The number of North State fatalities remains at one. Amy Travis, Deputy Director of the Glenn County Office of Emergency Services, said the single patient identified there is isolated at home and improving. Travis said officials had not sought to trace the movements of or who the patient may have had contact with prior to going into isolation. She said, regardless of where you are, to take the illness seriously.
This is very widespread in California, and so that's why the governor did put in place the stay-at-home order. You could travel anywhere and come in contact potentially with somebody that has been exposed to COVID. So that's why it's really important, if you're not conducting essential business, to stay at home.
With less than a week to go before rent is due for millions of Californians, and 8 days after millions were ordered to stay home from work, sacrificing their income, Governor Gavin Newsom today prohibited evictions in the state through the end of May. The executive order prohibits law enforcement agencies and the courts from enforcing an eviction order. Tenants must be able to prove they cared for a child whose school was closed, were laid off, or lost hours. Tenants must also notify landlords in writing no more than a week after rent is due that they're suffering a COVID-19-related financial hardship. The move pairs with action announced yesterday for homeowners. Newsom said Thursday most financial institutions issuing mortgages in California had agreed to offer 3 months of forbearance, while Bank of America will provide a single month. Under forbearance, payments are effectively postponed and the loan term extended. The U.S. Forest Service is following the lead of California state parks and restricting access to places where people gather, reducing the likelihood of virus transmission. All campgrounds, most picnic areas, and some parking lots have been closed. Trails and trailheads remain open. Local forest units have some discretion, so visitors are encouraged to call ahead about specific facilities. For NSPR News, I'm Mark Albert.
This is special programming on the novel coronavirus from North State Public Radio. I'm Sarah Bohannon. For teachers and students living in this pandemic, it's likely been an interesting week. Many schools started their first week of virtual instruction on Monday. While going online is a no-brainer in California's connected urban areas, for those that are rural, the effort can be particularly challenging. To learn more about these barriers, NSPR's Mark Albert spoke with Angela Stiegel, president of the Marysville Unified Teachers Association in Yuba County, where internet connectivity is far from universal.
Statewide schools have been told to pivot to online instruction. Many of the students that you serve, though, are in rural foothill communities. How is that even possible where there's poor internet service and where families may not even have home computers?
It is requiring a whole new level of creativity and innovation and resilience and grit and perseverance
on the part of students and teachers and their parents and families. We're having to make sure that we cover a lot of bases, and we're trying to just absolutely do the best we can. And within that, we're having to be very responsive when we are hearing from parents and students about what their needs are. We have students that have internet access and they have computers, and then we have students who have internet access without computers. We have students also that are on IEPs, individualized education plans, that they are now not able to get the services that they have a right to and that we are required to provide. And so we have teachers who are checking in by phone. We have teachers who are putting paper packets together, and those are going in the so-called snail mail to get up to students. Our district technology department has opened up our Wi-Fi signal at every one of our campuses, and we have put word out that if you can get to the parking lot of one of our campuses, then you have the Wi-Fi signal there and are more than welcome to use the Wi-Fi there. Just yesterday, I was hearing that our technology department is also trying to work with some community, I guess you would say almost like community gathering places or posts that now aren't so much physical gathering places, but they're trying to get together with some of those to see about possibly getting some sort of Wi-Fi signal out of some of those places. For instance, we have a fire station, what we call Up the Hill. And I heard yesterday that there may be some talk of trying to figure out something as far as getting almost like a Wi-Fi hotspot going in places like that. There are also a couple of markets, a hardware store, a couple of places like that that we may very well be trying to partner with to have those become Wi-Fi hotspots and then let our families up there know. We're also talking about getting Chromebooks together very rapidly to get checked out to students and families so that they can use those. And then we are still going to be continuing with trying to devise a paper or hard copy version of things as well. It's almost like you're having to do not just twice the work, but even like three or four times the work to make sure that you're doing everything possible to reach and help every student possible. Because if this goes to required work, we have to. But if this goes to the online model is going to be required because that's how we're going to have to finish out the year, then we are legally obligated to do that as well. It's the only way we can make the work mandatory, is if we have a way to solve and rectify all of these equity and access issues.
What are the types of assignments that you can give to students who don't have access to technology?
There are still going to be a number of things where we can still work on skills that our students need to be college or career ready. You know, the reading and the writing, which still can be done with paper book and with actual pen and paper. But it is going to require us to almost kind of dial back 15 or 20 years into the types of assignments that we were giving, but also still finding ways to modify those and bring those into the current era. I can't just tell my students, for instance, here's the textbook, read Romeo and Juliet. Because even though that's just the textbook and here you've got the physical part of it, Romeo and Juliet is difficult for students to understand on a daily basis in a classroom with access to a teacher right there, much less just take it home and do it on your own. And so we're still going to have to find ways that we can reach out to and connect with our students on the daily so that when they have those questions and when they encounter those difficulties, we have ways to get through those with them instead of just, you know, leaving them to their own devices.
How do those types of lessons and that type of approach compare and contrast with official online instruction that's going on in more urban areas?
We're going to have to make sure that they match the rigor of what we would be doing online. And that's right now, that's the challenge that we're encountering, because you could end up very well in the idea of here's the book, take it home and read it, because I don't know what else I can do, you know, since you don't have the internet. And then on the internet, you know, here's all this great stuff we're doing. And we can't do that. That's not equitable to our students either. And so that's part of the biggest challenge we have right now, is trying to determine how can we take a paper and pen or book and pen lesson and make sure that it matches the rigor of what we are doing online. And I will not lie to you when I tell you that that is a challenge in and of itself.
That was Angela Stiegel, president of Marysville Unified Teachers Association in Yuba County, speaking with NSPR's Mark Albert. You're listening to special coverage on the novel coronavirus from North State Public Radio. More just ahead. This is special coverage from North State Public Radio. I'm Sarah Bohannon. As we just heard regarding schools, living in a rural area, while often beautiful, does provide its own challenges. To learn more about how rural medical workers are doing, I reached out to Susie Foster. She's the chief medical officer at Hill Country Clinic and Wellness Center. They have locations in both Reading and Round Mountain. Before I get into the interview, I want to note that I actually spoke to Foster 5 years ago. She just returned from helping with the Ebola outbreak in Sierra Leone. So when this pandemic hit, I knew I wanted to speak with her again. The first thing I asked her in our conversation today was whether or not she's seeing any similarities to what she's previously seen in West Africa and what she's seeing now at home.
I think there are quite a few similarities, and in those similarities are also differences. So when I worked in Sierra Leone, we were wearing very, very, very robust PPE. So I have experience seeing patients in personal protective equipment. And while those standards for the COVID virus for PPE are less than that we saw in Sierra Leone, it still helps to have that experience to be able to help staff through some of their fears of seeing patients in their personal protective equipment. The differences, Ebola wasn't a pandemic. So as scary as Ebola was, and yes, the mortality rate is high, the COVID virus is a pandemic. So we've already, according to the World Health Organization, had over 20,000 deaths from the coronavirus, and over 400,000 cases have been diagnosed. Where with Ebola in the 2014-2015 outbreak, I believe we lost about 14,000 people. So we've already surpassed that in this pandemic.
In terms of your work now, how has this pandemic affected the Hill County Health and Wellness Center? You know, do you feel safe? Do your colleagues feel safe? Do you feel like you have the equipment that you need there? What's going on at this time?
I think that our staff is just as apprehensive as everybody else. We have patients coming in and seeing us every single day, and that brings its own set of anxieties. We have transitioned over to a number of telephone visits. We have a video visit platform that we were able to get up and running this week. So patients, we can encourage our patients to be sheltering in place if they don't need to be seen in the clinic. There are obviously patients who we need to see in order to evaluate their situation. But there are probably about 50%, maybe 75% of our patients who don't need to come into the clinic for their chronic health conditions, and we're able to see them over the telephone or over a video visit platform, which obviously adds a huge layer of protection for our staff. We're taking temperatures of our staff every single day when they come to work. All of our staff are wearing masks. All of our frontline staff are wearing masks anytime they're within 6 feet of a patient. And our PPE supply is okay right now. I keep telling my staff that this is a marathon, not a sprint. So we do look okay right now. I can see some shortages coming in the not so distant future. But we really are just encouraging everybody to wear the PPE on a regular basis that they feel they need to feel safe. And then obviously making sure that everybody's wearing their full PPE when they're seeing a patient with any symptoms. To help with some of these shortages that we do foresee, we are looking at, is there a way to clean the appropriate PPE supplies in between patients or in between days so that we can make those shortages come a little further down the road? And I'm just hoping that the supply chains will come through for us and that we won't have to make that decision about what to do because we don't have the right PPE.
Yeah. Are you seeing people coming in with symptoms possibly of COVID-19 at this point?
Yes. Our clinic has tested about 20 or so people. We have not had any positive tests at our clinic. And we have a number of people, you know, who are experiencing allergy symptoms. And that creates its own set of anxieties right now when you're having coughing and sneezing and runny nose and, you know, can feel a little feverish with allergies. And there are a number of upper respiratory viruses going around that are not COVID-19 that have similar symptoms. And so, there is a lot of uncertainty in the community about, are these symptoms that I'm having, are they coronavirus symptoms? And so a number of people are coming in, and it really helps to, I think, alleviate some of the anxieties of the patients to be able to be in front of a medical practitioner and say, oh no, you know, I think that you probably are okay. I don't think that you have the symptoms of coronavirus. I think you have allergies. Or, yeah, I think we should test you and you need to go home and self-quarantine until we have your results.
Is there anything else you want to share just about working in a rural health clinic that you can think of during this time?
Yeah, so, I mean, all of the things that you would normally associate with rural living, you know, there's the potential for social isolation. It's hard to access services in a rural area. There's food insecurities in a rural area. All of those become tenfold when everyone is sheltering in place, when people aren't working, so it's hard for them to drive 35 miles to go grocery shopping, hard for them to drive 35 miles to go to the pharmacy. Those tasks then become that much more difficult. And so as a clinic, we're working with our patients to help them fight their food insecurities. We have a food pantry that we can put food boxes together for some of our patients.
One of the things I wanted to bring up is that, you know, 5 years ago when you came back from Sierra Leone, when you were working with Ebola, you were under a 21-day quarantine, I believe.
Correct.
And so I feel like a lot of people are in that position now where they're self-isolating. And I was just wondering if you had any tips for people as they're staying at home.
Yes. So take walks. Sit outside in the sunshine when it's there. Make sure that you do get some sunshine every day if you can. Social distance yourself if you're on walks. You know, make sure that you're staying 6 feet away from those that you're not living with. But I think it's really important to establish yourself a routine. You know, we've just been thrown from, oh, I have to get up every morning, go to work, go to the gym, come home, make dinner. You know, everybody had their routine to now, like, okay, you need to stay at home. You need to, you know, yes, you might be working, but you don't maybe have to clock in at 7 o'clock in the morning. So establish yourself a routine and get out and get the exercise you can in a safe way. Stay connected. Use the teleplatforms that we have to stay connected to your family and friends.
So the last time we spoke, one of the things that you said that really stuck with me after that conversation was that you really felt like it was the local doctors, nurses, and support staff in Sierra Leone who you felt like were the true heroes in that fight. And so I just wanted to play the clip of you saying that.
They haven't been able to go home, many of them, because they live in villages that won't accept them back as long as they're working in an Ebola treatment unit. So they live at the treatment unit. They eat there, they sleep there, they go to church near there, or mosque near there. And And many of them haven't seen their families in a really long time. And they're doing it because they care for their country.
When I heard that, it just really made me think of all these stories that I've been seeing, you know, on Twitter or Facebook from doctors and nurses who are on the front line of this pandemic. Many are either living at the hospital, I've seen that, or a lot of them are individually isolating away from their families to protect them. And so I was just wondering if you had a message, you know, for those medical workers at all.
Yeah, wow, that clip brings up a lot of emotion for me. You know, I had a friend call me last weekend, and she's a nurse practitioner who works for a private practice in Reading. And she said, I've never questioned my healthcare, my decision to go into healthcare until now. And so we talked through that a little bit, and it turns out that their office didn't have really any of the PPE that they needed to have. And she has a husband, and she has a daughter, and she says, I just feel like every night that I go home, I'm putting my family at risk. And like, how do I ethically continue to do this? You know, where's the ethics in putting my patients in front of my family? And you know, that's tragic. Like, we need our healthcare community to feel supported and safe more now than ever. Our clinic was able to provide them with not a ton of PPE, but at least some to get them through for a little while. And so my message is that we have to fight this fight together. We have to reach out to one another. We have to lean on one another. We have to stay safe for one another and for our patients and for our family. Really to offer each other kindness and grace and believe that everyone is doing their best at this really challenging time.
That was Susie Foster, Chief Medical Officer at Hill Country Clinic and Wellness Center in Reading and Round Mountain. We have to fight this fight together. That's a message I've heard a lot lately, and you probably have too. Maybe even from this next voice you're about to hear, Dr. Steve Zlotowski. On Monday, he recorded a video on Facebook asking the public to stay at home in order to protect the lives of people on the front lines, like him and their families. As of today, the video has more than 27,000 views. We'll now air it in its entirety.
Hi. My name's Dr. Steve Zlotowski, and I'm an emergency medicine physician at Enloe Medical Center in Chico, California. It's Monday morning, March 23rd, and I'm coming to you from the somewhat chilly but cozy confines of a friend's trailer, where I've been self-quarantined since last week. I want to talk to you about the COVID-19 pandemic. I don't have a script. I'm just going to speak to you from the heart and from the head, so please bear with me. This isn't a soundbite. This isn't a time for soundbites. Since I was on duty on March 10th, I've been self-quarantined at home and for the last week now in this trailer, deeming it not even appropriate for me to be with my family. Last week, I kissed my wife, hopefully not for the last time. The reality is that at the hospital, as a frontline healthcare worker, I'm at extremely high risk to acquire this disease. I'm extremely high risk to give it to those that I love. I don't want to do that. And I can't really risk getting it from other people, those people that I live with, because there's only so many of us who do what I do in our community, only so many of us who do what a great many people at the hospital do. Everybody who works there at every capacity is a limited resource. And we need your help. You've all been hearing a lot about flattening the curve. What does that really mean? Well, here's what it really means. That you or someone you love show up at the hospital and we are unable to save your life or the life of somebody you care about. We won't be able to do it, not because we don't know how, but because we don't have the beds, the equipment, the oxygen, the ventilators, the personnel to be able to do the job under these extraordinary circumstances. I can speak for every one of my colleagues as an emergency medicine physician, and I can speak for all the extraordinary professionals, that I've worked with for 19 years since 2001 at this hospital. We are up to do the above and the beyond of whatever we can possibly give. But we need your help. We need you to stay at home and abide by these isolation precautions that you've heard so much about. We need you to wash your hands and not touch your face and not be with anybody outside your household. We need you to follow those kinds of precautions that you've been hearing about, that maybe one person and one person only goes out once a week for your household to get the essential supplies. It's an extraordinary ask, and these are extraordinary times. And for all of us in the North State, we've already been through a lot, haven't we? The effects of the fires are felt every single day. And now this. But we don't get to have a choice. We just have to rise to the call. We at the hospital here in Chico, and at hospitals all around this country, we're ready to do the best we can. We're ready to give everything we've got. We need your help. We can't do it without you. Please, please abide by the directions to stay at home. Please take this seriously. Thanks.
That was Dr. Steve Zlotowski, an emergency medicine physician at Enloe Medical Center in Chico, asking the public to please stay home to help protect those on the front lines of this pandemic. I hate to end on such a heavy note, but the reality of our situation is heavy, and so is the responsibility each one of us has right now. We need to stay apart for the time being so that ultimately we can hopefully one day be back together. So I just wanted to let you know that I'm going home, and I'm going to stay there. I've been one of the few people at the radio station this week. We've been trying to figure out how to go remote and still bring you all of the essential news you need, and I think we've figured it out. So now my little world of home to radio station to home, will just be home. Susie, Dr. Zlotowski, I want to thank you both and your colleagues for being there for us. And I want to let you know that I am here for you. I am packing up my recording equipment, I am self-isolating, and I am taking this seriously. For those of you listening, I hope you are too. And that's your program for Friday, March 27th, 2020. As always, we want to hear from you, and we also have a question for you. Now that we're keeping our distance from each other, how many people did you used to see in one day, and how many do you interact with now? Let us know on our message line, 433-9216, or on our website, mynspr.org. Tonight's special coverage was produced by Mark Albert, Ken Duvall, Christian Solis, Andre Bayek, and Phil Wilkie. Our technical producer is Matt Fidler. Thank you for being with us. I'm Sarah Bohannon, News Director at North State Public Radio, and this is Special Coverage. We'll be back Monday evening at 6:30. Until then, stay safe, stay informed, and stay strong. It's not easy, and even if you feel alone right now, just know, we are all in this together.